Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took, and brought to you by Black Frog Media. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today, with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, November 24, 2020 on Facebook Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, Corey, and Darren.
Yeah, we're
on time. It's 2 p.m. Look at that. Boom.
Is this the first?
Could be.
Have we been on time?
Could be.
Yeah.
I got my Christmas mug today.
What does it say? I've been naughty. What?
It was nice. I don't know.
Wait, okay. Where did the hockey puck go?
I've got two going today. I just got brought a latte, and then that's just a black cup of Tim Hortons over there.
Oh, okay. But your Tim Hortons cup has a hockey puck on the bottom of it.
It does, yeah. Well, let's talk about that then.
Okay, let's talk about that.
This is a Tim Hortons cup, and it's got a hockey puck for the base. You can actually see the Tim Hortons logo on the base of the hockey puck. But it
Amazing.
Works as the
Where's the puck made? Can you look up? Is it made in the Czech Republic?
It's got a hockey dude, which I assume is Tim Horton on the bottom. I would sit there and
Oh, I never noticed. I have one of those cups too. Really? Is it actually like a? Let's see, Todd.
I got a copy in it.
Let's see the bottom.
Yeah, it would make for its own comic. It's just a hockey dude, and it says Tim Hortons across it. So I assume it's probably a silhouette of the actual Tim Horton.
Tim Horton.
Ah, nice. Did you guys ever say, hold your cheeks like this and say puck?
Oh yeah, dude.
Everybody.
I was born on a pirate ship.
Yeah. So we shouldn't be encouraging people to stick their hands in their mouth.
That's true.
No, that's true. Not during. Well, if you're locked in your own house, you probably can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just don't
yeah.
stick anybody else's fingers in your mouth.
We'll all do it at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
What's everybody been up to? How's the week? Yeah. Everybody safe and sane and still doing
it. It's been good. I saw Brent Fitz the other day for coffee.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a bit of a jerk, that guy. Oh, well, I did. No.
Funny, you guys can still do that. I mean, if he was still back home, you can't visit anybody. You'd get fined.
Well, that's true. It is somewhat. This is prior to the actual new set of rules that came in. But it was
literally the day before.
The day before, yeah, and it was fairly, you know, controlled. We just sort of
had coffee.
Had coffee. Finished our coffee. Didn't even say goodbye. Just stormed out.
Well, that sounds like a good time. So what is it like now? They put tougher laws in place now? You guys can't see each other?
Yeah. They restricted the gatherings to what, Todd? 25%. And there's more to it, though.
But I know that they're trying to open up venues, and this is actually a good sign. But unfortunately, it's like 50 people in a showroom, including staff, which I think is bananas when you consider how big some of our showrooms are in this town. So when things bounce back, I think they're trying to get, you know, like 50 people, including staff, which I think is like, I mean, how much is this? How many people are on staff in a place like that? So, yeah, it's going to be weird.
I did go to a show on Wednesday. My sister's doing the Michael Jackson show here.
Really?
Live.
They closed it for a couple weeks, huh?
I just saw
it. Yeah, as of Sunday, for sure, that show, and I think probably any show that's currently on the strip, because they were already maxed out at 50%. So when I went to see the show on a Wednesday night, it was sold out, but at 250 people in a 600-person venue, you know, it looks all spaced out, which was fine, and the show was good. Even my sister and the band had masks on stage. The Michael Jolas, the Michael Jackson, he takes it off, you know, during the show. But like, it was kind of
it's funny.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah, Michael used to wear those things all the time.
So yeah,
it was ahead of his time for sure.
Yeah,
but I think as of Sunday it went into effect. So, and I know you're even locked down more, Darren, but didn't you guys in LA have some new thing, like no dining outside even or something?
Starting tomorrow. No eating outside, only takeout and delivery.
For how long?
Well, for at least 2 or 3, 4 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep it from being absolutely out of control by Christmas. you know.
It is It is so bad here that they have literally blanketed off anything they deem non-essential. So if you go into a store, if you go to a store, anything that they basically think you can live without right now is tarped off. So give you an example, like I couldn't buy paper yesterday for my printer. Like I can't buy a pen or a paper.
Wow.
So I got so frustrated. I went to the liquor store, which is open next door. So it's okay.
That's essential.
Yeah. So is the pot store. So, I mean, kids are getting no gifts. They're getting booze and weed.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Is Blockbuster Video still open?
Well, funny you should say that, because isn't there one Blockbuster Video and it's still open somewhere in the States, isn't it?
I think we discussed this. Yeah, there's like one Blockbuster Video still open somewhere in the United States.
And I think
States.
They only stay open for the tweets because their Twitter account is huge.
their account like a museum now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can only rent like, you know, Big Mama's House and stuff like that.
Yeah, but
stuck in 93 or
the late charges are insane.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. I know, we've all been there. So, well, you know what? We're having fun, but we're gonna have more fun too. But we're gonna wait and bring our guest on to participate with
absolutely
us and have some fun. All so right. Let's not waste any more time. Shane, you want to do the intro?
Yep, please. I'm so excited about today.
By the way, you look really awesome today. What's different?
Turn off, so I'll speed this up.
Yeah, you got a new camera or something.
See if how's the eye detection working.
Do the guitars always play there, or did you set that up?
I set it up.
It looks staged.
Wow, it looks very staged, but it looks good. It looks good.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. I can't take my eyes off you.
Comment from last week, somebody said Shane looks like he's on the set of Kramer's. Remember when Kramer took all the studio talk show stuff out of the garbage can and set it up
in the Merv Griffin show?
Totally.
I've always said it looks like you're at Paisley Park. So it's amazing having a guest that's actually worked at Paisley Park.
There you go.
This is a good segue.
I wonder if you can see this.
Where'd he go?
I was segueing for him. But
today's guest, what can you say about today's guest? An amazing songwriter, singer. She's played bass with like the most legendary artists on the planet. Jeff Beck, Lee Ritenour.
That's insane.
Dude.
Prince. Beyonce.
Let's bring her out. Beyonce. Yeah. The gorgeous. Rhonda Smith.
Hey! My boys! Hi,
girl. Welcome!
Thank you for having me. No other place I would rather be than in Tuque territory.
Oh, bless you.
That's amazing. We're
fellow Canucks.
Are we a province or a territory? I mean, that's...
I think we're... Yeah.
Thank Tuque you Talk for is a territory right now.
Playing with all those like heavy hitters and then coming and hanging around with the likes of us. Thank you.
No.
Thank you for taking your thinking cap off and lowering your standards.
I should say the same thing. Same thing.
Oh, back. No, never.
This is awesome.
Is that a Juno Award behind you, by the way? Look at that, ladies and gentlemen.
That is, as a matter of fact, good eye.
That is.
Wow.
I wasn't you know, a metronome.
Now, I thought I was watching, vodka.
You thought it was vodka. That's the funny thing is the Juno Award is filled with vodka. The Juno Award is is the Canadian Grammy, and Rhonda has her very own. And it's not for something a project. It's for your own project, right? That you won that for yourself, right?
Yeah, that was a collaboration with some people. That was a group called it was Jim Hillman and the Merlin Factor in 1994 of all times. And I think we won for the best jazz contemporary album at that time.
Wow.
Amazing.
See what I got from going from one, you know, style to another. So that was a contemporary jazz
award. That's so awesome.
Listen to that cat. Who's got the kitten in the back?
Yeah, who's
that's my cat. My wife left and now that cat's freaking out. This is a new development. As soon as someone leaves, she's screaming about it. I'm like, okay. So,
no.
Yeah, it's like, mom, meatloaf.
But, was that cat out of stray? Did it just come and just now it's just living with you, or did you?
Yeah, that's the stray cat that has been here for about. Well, she's hardly stray now. It's the most, you know, domesticated foofy cat ever. But she walked in off the street into our house, and now basically I. lease this place from her. I just kind of, she allows me to hang out here on occasion.
Nice.
But I yeah, that's amazing. So 94, you won that? What were you, 11?
Funny. Yeah, 94. Let's see how I skipped over that.
Yeah, no, we were nominated. My band was nominated in 98. And I went there and I was sitting like between like Mark Messier and Shania Twain, and we lost. So it was that kind of night. But it was, you know, I was like, why are we here? Like, who would allow this? You know, someone has made a grotesque oversight.
Was that best rock album? Was that the category? Remember?
I think it was either that or best rock band or most inappropriate choice of nominee to be in this building. But it was, you know, it's one of those things. As a Canadian, you know, a Juno is a big deal. So it's something.
It was a big deal, and I think it was in Hamilton, Ontario, at that particular year, or some crazy. It's one of those crazy little towns.
Yeah,
at Cops Coliseum, probably.
Cops.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Might have been.
Which incidentally is where we rehearsed for a Shania Twain tour.
Really?
For 2 weeks. Yes.
There you go. I was going to say, you already won. Sitting between Mark Messier and Shania Twain, there's no way you can go up from there.
I know, totally. I know. I was like, this is really weird. I was like, why are, you know. It was like, it was more like Shania, security guy, me, security guy, and then Mark Messier, probably how that went. But Cops Coliseum is also, oddly enough, the last place the Age of Electric played, opening for Our Lady Peace. There's a good Canadian name drop for you.
Yeah,
we were opening for Our Lady Peace, finished the show, and never played again in Hamilton, Ontario. And my in-laws are from Hamilton as well. So Hamilton's a great city. But anyway, enough about that.
Weren't there three bands on that tour? Wasn't that was Rhymes with Orange on that tour with you too?
I don't remember. We initially did. I think though that run of dates was just Our Lady Peace. It might have been Our Lady Peace, or I mean, us. Somebody more relevant, and then Our Lady Peace.
All but right, I'm not sure. We're just name dropping bands.
Wow! Well, look what Shane just turned into. Oh
yeah.
What the heck,
ladies and gentlemen? Shane decided to go and get a new camera because the other one wasn't working so well. So this is much better.
Oh my God, Shane.
So Rhonda, as you can see, our format of no format is exactly that. So.
It's unscripted comedy. So Rhonda, you come from, initially you came from like East Coast, Halifax. My mother is born in Halifax, which is honestly, I've never really gotten to play that much out in that part of the world. But those people out there rock. It's like, it's because we rarely, us bands rarely make, hang on, I think Shane's trying to, it looks like he's trying to dial up porn or something. I'm not sure what he's doing. But,
or get free satellite television.
Yeah, exactly.
One more.
But then, how old were you when you moved to Montreal?
You know, I left Halifax, I think, when I was 2 years old.
So oh, okay. So,
oh, wow.
So I really have no memory of it. And right. It was funny because probably about 10 years, or maybe about 8 years, maybe 7 years ago, we ended up there playing a show with Jeff Beck, of all places.
Wow.
Which was just absolutely hilarious. So
it was
big fun. And you're definitely right about that. People with big hearts love music. It's just a really special, unique little place.
Like even like the librarian nice lady can drink you under the table. Like, it's just like it's next level. Yeah, I'm like, but no, there's so many things.
It's that Canadian sailor connection too. That's big time, especially when it comes to
absolutely, you know, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. There's so many things to talk about because when you bring up Jeff Beck, I could spend an hour talking about Jeff because I am not a muso at all. I'm like I love. So many different kinds of music, but Jeff Beck is one of those guys that in recent years, I was just kind of like went down that rabbit hole again. Jeff's one of those guys that every 10 years, there's a new, like, is this guy like the best guitar player on the planet again? Like it's like,
yes.
Very few of his contemporaries, say Eric Clapton or Jimmy Page or any of those guys, as amazing as those guys are, Jeff always seems to be evolving and still growing as a guitar player. And I watched him on, you know, that DVD or whatever he put out a few years back. And I was just like, it's the kind of thing, you are the same way as a musician, where I kind of think to myself, it's inspiring, but it's also it kind of makes you want to practice a lot or just give it up completely. There's no in between. It's like, it's mind blowing. I can't believe it. How did that gig come up?
Man, that was just crazy. You know, it came through actually Narada Michael Walden, the drummer, who was going to end up playing with him. And he actually recommended me for the job, and we had never played before. So I thought that was ironic in itself, but something in him knew. And I was doing something else. I was doing this really cool trio thing I was doing with an artist. It was Catherine McPhee, actually. She had a new record that came out. So we were doing a lot of morning radio shows in New York and LA. We were doing that whole morning radio routine. And they had called me during that. And were like, hey, can you come right now? Because I think they had another situation at the time. He was getting ready to go right into this tour with Eric Clapton. That was, I forgot what it was called, Then and Now, Now and Then or something.
Yeah,
there and Back, that, or not There and Back, but something like that, the first one. It was in 2010. So he had that one booked up. So they decided to just make a change right away with drums and bass. So they just pulled us in there right away. And from January 1, we started banging out his show. As of course, I was on another gig, but they gave me a little bit of music to learn. So I really learned his entire show in a hotel room in New York on another gig. But I didn't have an amp or anything. I just had something that I could play some music on, and I had my bass. That was it. So I had to pretty much learn most of his show, which I think at that time I was relying on Ronnie Scott's, that entire video.
Yeah, that's the video I'm talking about. That thing is bananas.
Yeah, then so I had to pretty much learn that whole thing because that's really all that I had.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of connotations of his stuff because he's been so amazing and he's been just killing it for so many years. You can hear so many different versions of the same song that he's done
all
the time. So you want to make sure that you're doing the right one, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
But that's how it started. It was Narada Michael Walden. So we were right into it from day one. From January 1 right on, he was just like a racehorse out the door. He was touring so much those first 2 years. And he won, I think, 6 Grammys or 4 Grammys that
incredible.
2000. So we started with the Grammys too. We had to go do that. So it was really... It was really insane, but it was really, really great to start that way. And it was a great tour with Eric. It was really cool. And Jeff is just the shit, you know, all the way around. I mean, not only is he, you know, the most amazing phenom guitar player, but he's just a really, really cool guy. He's a great friend. He's got a lot of history, a lot of stories, and it's just a lot of fun to be around, you know.
It blows my mind, honestly. I mean, the things that you've done are the kind of things that you can't phone them in. So as a kid, when you got, I know there's a story of you, what was it, your brother brought home a bass and you weren't allowed to play it. So the long story, I love that you end up becoming like a bass player for your career based on an instrument you weren't allowed to touch. But
it's crazy. And I, you know, I haunt my brother and just mess with him constantly with this. We love each other to death, but it's so funny because he still plays bass, but not professionally. He does other stuff. So it's hilarious to him, this whole thing, which really started that way. He brought it home, put it in the case. I wanted to see what it was. And he said, you know, don't touch it. Basically, we were very close in age, about 15 months difference. So we were very competitive. My other two siblings were much a little bit older than that. So I was a little bit competitive with him at that age, and thank God, because the rest of my family played, but my sister played clarinet, so I didn't want to do that. My oldest brother played trombone, so I really wasn't feeling that. So, of course, my brother brings a guitar home. That's what's going to do it.
You know, so that is so awesome.
Pretty funny.
What kind of bass was it?
You know what? It was probably a Sears guitar
or
some really cheap thing, but my brother was a real bugger that way, and he knows it. And he's implemented some good things in me in the sense that I'm a really great negotiator, which is unfortunate for other people who have to deal with me. But it's because of him torturing me as a child and overpricing things that he sold me as a child, you know, that I found out later were just, you know, pretty much worthless or, you know, were marked up like 4 times. But that was, you know, that was my brother at that time. Love him, amazing. Still do, but he taught me how to negotiate and all of that too, which is really great.
Which is important in this business, let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
In any business, really.
Right? The business, the music business.
Yeah. Can I? Can you negotiate my contract with Tuke? Because these guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. I heard some rumors. Yeah. We can talk.
I'm interested to know, Rhonda, what were you listening to? What were you hearing when you were at that age, musically?
You know, I started probably maybe at 10, 11, maybe around that time, maybe a little younger. But I remember when I was in my last year of elementary school, last 2 years, we had a music program. And I remember I had a ukulele and I talked the teacher into allowing me to bring my bass in when everyone else was playing a ukulele because it had four strings and it was tuned the same way. So long story short, it's been a lot of years of that. But because I started in Canada, guys, you know the stories. So it was basically rock that was on the radio that I grew up with. You know, we were had our garage bands when we would knock it out that way, which was usually the
April Wine,
probably the drummer's like house.
Yeah.
April Wine, Rush, Jimi Hendrix. Yes.
Wow. Please. See, you had to have the sixth degree black belt you have to start playing the way you play. I'm still kicking. I made a career out of this yellow belt. I'm still going.
Man, it was the funnest stuff. It was really the funnest stuff. So it kept us out of, kept me and a lot of us out of a lot of trouble. It was the best way to go, but it was really a culmination of all of that. But I will say that things started to change later. I didn't really get into R&B or anything like that till much, much, much later in my life. I really didn't listen to a lot of that in my childhood because it really wasn't around. But what was that really made the difference? Because Montreal was there, Montreal had a history even more than of having a really large jazz and fusion base that a lot of people would come out and support, which is hard to see it not be there today. So that influenced me a lot, too, in being a fretless player when I was younger, starting that early, listening to Jaco, listening to, you know, Alan Caron, Uzeb, you know, when I was 14 or 15, where people still sometimes go, who's Alan Caron? Like, what's wrong with you, man? What, you get your head out of the sand. A lot of different stuff like that, because my mother listened to a lot of jazz. There was a lot of jazz clubs, so started that way, liking a lot of acoustic players, just a lot of blends of a lot of things. And also there were a lot of people playing different types of music, like steel drums, and there was a lot of Latin music, and there were a lot of other Caribbeans and other influences also because of, you know, the large immigration that goes on in Canada. So a lot of those influences we were able to play and saw a lot also. So it's a big meld of a lot of things, but a lot of rush, a lot of giddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Montreal is an awesome Stanley Clark. Montreal is an awesome melting pot that way, though. It really does have a lot of stuff going on there. And
Montreal Jazz Fest is world class for sure. It is.
It's up there with Montreux and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's funny when we did a rehearsal together for an artist, when we did that Prashant gig, remember, Rhonda?
Right. Yeah.
Can we get into rehearsal? And I've learned all Prashant's music, and we got in there. I think, I don't know if I tapped out YYZ or maybe you played it or something. It was some little, you know, thing where we're talking about doing that, and then we ended up, I don't know if we actually played it on the gig, but we played through it at the rehearsal.
Amazing.
And Rhonda was just killing it. I was like, wow, where did that come from? it was like, you must have been a really young age when you heard Getty.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that was the influence at, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 or going all the way up.
Sure.
Through 16, probably. Absolutely. All of those albums, you know, back in the times when, I hate to say it because we sound so old, but when album covers used to mean something. You know, used to
totally,
the
yeah.
Liner
yeah.
notes and look at the art that was part of it, and it would told a story. It wasn't just putting the needle or whatever you were listening to on one song. It was listening to the whole thing, the whole
collection
as a collection. Kind of miss those days, you know. I miss those days musically too.
My OCD had it so that if I listened to a record in the morning before I went to school, I could not stop it until that side was done before I left the house. So I was always late for school.
That was the reason, yeah.
Yeah, that was the reason, yeah. Now, I'd like to spend the next hour or 2 hours discussing whether it being the airport code in Toronto, Canada, whether it's YYZ or YYZ. Okay, it's let's YYZ. Go around. Let's go.
I'm sorry, it's YYZ. It has to be YYZ.
It's always been referred to as YYZ, and I've always thought to myself, it is in Toronto, though, isn't it? It would be YYZ.
How do they introduce it when they play it live? I guess they don't have to.
Yeah.
Well, they talk about it, though, on when you see the documentary YYZ.
They say that?
They did.
They refer to it as that?
Is that right?
Wow.
Canadian, you got to take it from the British tongue.
Yeah. Well, for years, we called him Neil Peart. It's Neil Peart. So we've learned all kinds of things. Yeah.
Rhonda, how long did you go to McGill? Did you do the full program there?
No, I didn't do the full program. And I ended up going there a little bit earlier. I think, was I in high school? No, I went to Marianapolis College in between, which is, in Canada, the difference between American, maybe there are some junior colleges, but there's no CJEPs the way that they are. Maybe that's just Quebec guys. Am I wrong? Is that Ontario too has CJEPs?
We're prairie guys.
Okay.
And you're also looking at, there's no secondary education going on over here. Well, Shane went to MBIT.
I got a college degree.
I went to UN in Edmonton, which was, I was thinking about going to McGill after I graduated, but I couldn't afford it.
Hey, really quickly, you know who else went to McGill? Rhonda knows who went to McGill. William Shatner went to McGill.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's a William Shatner pavilion or something there.
Oh, really?
I played there once. It's it looks like the lunchroom at a high school or something like that.
There's a teleporter there.
Yeah, you can teleport there whenever you want.
But usually what happens in Quebec is you go to high school and then you go to a CJEP, which is like a junior college, and then you go to university or you go to college after that. So when I finished.
Oh, great. What'd you do, Shane?
When I finished high school, I went to a music major.
Right.
You froze there for a second, Rhonda. Sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
At that time, as crazy as it is, a difference from now where you can go to like USC or something and be a pop major. You know, there was no such thing as pop majors back then. You had to be a classical major or a jazz major. That was your choice.
Wow.
Or get out or go somewhere else. So I started as a jazz major playing acoustic. So this is going back, sorry, Shane, on your story about McGill. When I was doing the jazz major and doing some of that stuff in Marianapolis, everything where I had to take like my principal study with the jazz bass teacher and with classical, I had to go to McGill to do it. And when I was in the ensembles also, I was in the jazz bands in McGill when I wasn't actually in McGill, when I was still in junior college. But I was like in the third or the second jazz band doing that anyway, reading the charts and being with the big bands at that time during McGill. So I did a couple of years of that also. Then I didn't end up finishing or even like going into McGill because I ended up joining, typical story, joining an R&B band.
Wow.
And I went on the road and said, you know, screw it. This is more what I want to do than teach.
So by acoustic, do you mean like upright? Were you doing upright?
Yeah.
I got an upright.
Yeah, doing classical.
You know how people have a treadmill and they just cover it in their laundry? I can get around on that thing, but currently it's covered in a Gene Simmons mask and a yellow submarine pillow. So you're welcome to come over and
you're waiting for your Bill Black call on the strip there. Or what?
Slim Jim Phantom would come to town once in a while, and I'd be like, when Slim Jim comes to town, I'm playing that thing, and I would do my thing, you know, I would just chew my hands up. I was like, I had no idea the level
it's
of
tough.
Dude, ooh. The skill involved in that, it's a whole other animal, really.
Dude.
But yeah, I would imagine, because your ability to kind of work without the frets, it just makes the whole thing a whole new animal. So when you go out on the road playing R&B, it's a whole other thing for you. It opens up a whole other world for you, I assume. I'm assuming you're playing electric bass by this point. You're back to the electric bass.
Yeah, you're saying when I'm, yes, absolutely. That was all electric. Yeah, yeah. I used to do a little bit. And you know what? During those times too, I used to be Miss Little Fakebook. I was doing a lot of going in jazz clubs with an acoustic, you know, with a fake book under my arm and doing all of that. Lord knows that's been lost many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in those days, that's what more or less what I was into, because that's what was, that was the market.
That's so cool. Yeah. I didn't hang. I mean, Shane's always been a jazz guy, too. I love jazz, but I just never, you know, I also love the Ramones. So, and that seemed easier.
So then when you started touring, was it Canada or was it North America or all over the place?
No, I started in Canada first. I think in Montreal, I tried to go as far as I could go with the artists that were there. Of course, when you're dealing with Quebec, where I lived, it's a little different than Ontario. Thank God, I don't know if you guys still have a lot of Canadian funding. We did at that time. That was a major
thing
in Canada. It was great that the government was willing to do all of this funding for folks. But there's a difference with Quebec artists, which is weird. It's almost like the French ones, I don't know if it's still, but a lot of the ones that I worked with at that time, they were unable to work anywhere else but Quebec, you know, because they don't sell in Ontario because people don't really buy a lot of French language music.
Right.
They don't sell in other places. Maybe they go to Shediac, New Brunswick or something like that on a, you know, special occasion. But generally, those types of artists are stuck in Quebec, or maybe they go to France every now and then if they're big.
Switzerland, maybe? Some French over there.
Maybe it's possible. So that market is really funny, and I felt that I could only go as far as I could go, especially with the artists, because you really only got one Celine there. There's not a lot of that. She was the only French Canadian artist, I think, that broke in the United States.
Well, how about Renee Simard?
But she wasn't singing in French, though. She was singing in English. But yeah, I know who Renee Simard is. That's hilarious.
Yeah,
of course.
So you guys know the market. The market is, let's say, challenged. Can I say challenged? And, you know, I want people throwing shit at me if I say that. It's a bit challenged because of...
Well, it was always fascinating because you could have a hit song all across Canada and be like killing it. And then you'd go up to Quebec and it was like starting from scratch. Like they kind of like... You had to kind of prove yourself again, and I always appreciated that. It wasn't kind of like a slam dunk,
or vice versa, the Quebec,
or vice versa.
You know, they're great there, but they have to prove themselves outside of Quebec, which is really tough. So, in that sense, with the years that I had spent in that market, I just basically felt that there really wasn't. I could only go so far.
Yeah,
you know, and I've really done everything that I felt that I could do there without playing with Celine Dion and playing with some artists that were pretty big in that market and starting out doing all kinds of things, playing every blues club that's ever existed, playing every shithole that's ever existed, you know, just for the fun of it. That's what we do, you know.
I think that's universal in jazz, blues, rock. There's always that.
We ride the ride. We ride the road because we like it. And that's just what it is. We don't know where we're going to end up or what's going to happen on the ride, but we do it because we like it. So part of that was just that coming to that assumption that I could just only do so much there, especially as an English speaking, a woman of color who's really not, my heritage is not really Francophone per se.
Right. Right.
Wasn't really a good mix. So when I got my opportunity to leave to try something new, I most certainly was up and ready for it. Definitely.
And what was the impetus into the US? How did that all come about?
That kind of started off with a NAMM show was the vehicle that allowed that to happen, because that allowed me to meet Sheila E. really at a NAMM show that was in California first, with a friend of mine also who was in Canada at that time, which was Cat Dyson, great guitar player.
Great.
And we were doing some product reps for Godan, actually, which we love.
Yeah.
They're fantastic, great Canadian.
Yeah, the best, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we were repping their stuff in Anaheim for them, and we met Sheila. And at that time, there weren't as many female musicians as there are now. So we kind of knew, you kind of know who's who. We met up with her. Everything was kind of cool. And then we ended up doing the Music Mesa in Germany after that. And she was there again with some other females. So we started getting to know each other. So at that time, he was putting a new band together, and I think she was going to be the band leader. So she was either recruiting or looking for people.
Don't leave us hanging. Yeah.
Wait for it. Oh, great.
Uh-oh.
Okay, fix your camera now, Shane. Give us something to entertain us.
He did. He went back to his laptop.
Oh, is that the laptop camera?
I gave up.
Yeah.
Poor Rhonda. Now she's like stuck.
Can we reboot somehow, Aaron? Oh, we lost you again, Rhonda.
Rose, Rhonda.
Oh, now she's really.
Yeah, sorry, Rhonda. You just disappeared on us.
Oh, sorry. You guys disappeared on me. That was weird.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
So you were talking about Music Mess and Sheila E., and then we kind of lost you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. And so we met her again at the Music Mesa. And she was going to put Prince's new band together. He wanted to make a change. And he's always been kind of open to females. So we submitted some stuff to her to give to him. And I guess apparently he listened to it eventually. But then months went by, and I got a call maybe about 2 months later, 3 months later, that he wanted me to go down to Paisley Park to just play with him.
That's crazy.
So, that's how it started, as crazy as it was, because there's no way to prepare for that. He has
too much
material. And even at that time, I was not somebody, of course, I knew who he was, but I wasn't somebody who was listening to all his bass parts and copying his style at that time. So that was a bit of a challenge to, again, get his style down, because that Minneapolis funk guitar player playing bass kind of vibe that he's got that is just so nasty. And it's made up all of those things and all those idiosyncrasies was a challenge. It was really great. So that's how it started. I went, he called me and I went down there.
Amazing. That's crazy. That's essentially like, you know, Walt Disney called me and I went down to Disney World or whatever.
It's
like,
sure. Exactly.
You know, really Wonka or something. Cause we've been in Paisley Park before, and it's, you know, now that he's gone, it's even more surreal. To think that this is a place that he lived, and then that live room in his building is an actual full capacity venue, and then multiple studios. It was bananas. It was like, you know, everything you could hope it would be. So I can imagine walking in there and being like, okay, here we go. I mean, I can't imagine what that must have been like.
It was incredible. And that was in 1996.
Right. So, yeah. You
know, I've had a very long relationship with him over the years that went till the last time we worked together was basically the end of 2009, just before I started with Jeff doing the stuff at the Nokia when he did three shows in one night in LA with three crazy different bands. Right. So it was crazy. And Paisley for the first time was crazy. I have a lot of skin. I have a lot of stories in that building. I spent a lot of years there. I lived in Minneapolis for 3 years. The first 3 years I worked for him. It was a lovely place, the warmest place and the coldest place on earth at the same time.
Right.
Oh my God.
It's such a strange thing because, you know, you don't really think of, I mean, when you're there, you know, every city has a scene. You don't really think about it until you're in Minneapolis and you go, damn, a lot of great acts came out of here. And he was, you know, he created a lot of what came out of there and brought a lot of attention to the town in and of itself. When you go there and you're jamming with him, and the cool thing about Prince is that when you're playing with Prince, it's not like you're learning verbatim. He's kind of like when we talked about Jeff doing multiple versions of songs. Prince seemed to kind of, the song sort of evolved around whoever was playing with him, and it's sort of jazz versions of classic songs, and it seemed to be really kind of like, he seemed free form anyway. I don't know how free form it really was, but he didn't seem slavish to the original tracks of hit songs or whatever like that. He kind of did his own. Did he let you guys kind of run with it as far as your parts go, or were you actually trying to cop like parts from records and whatnot?
Depending on the project, that's different. But if talk about his catalog, I'd say a big no.
Really?
No, you're not running with nothing. No.
Right.
Respecting the part, you are playing the part, you're learning the part, and you're playing what it is. And until he tells you to change it, that's basically what it's going to be.
That's like Corey at Tuke.
That's like Corey at Tuke.
Well, those are his babies, you know. It's his masterpiece. And he was, I wouldn't say he was famous for saying it because nobody really knew, but in my mind he was. He would always say this phrase, which is totally about him. He would make an analogy, like if the band has five musicians in it, it's really only four, and the fifth one is space or silence. That's really what he was about. It wasn't about butchering stuff or even like playing an extra pluck on a bass, even anything extra at all. Anything like that changed everything. It had to be how it was, and then it could be embellished after the fact. But he was very much in control of every single note, the majority.
What about charts, Rhonda? As far as like, was your, did you make a chart for yourself, or would you have like, what if a set list was called audible during a show or something? Like I've always wondered, would the set list be evolving all the time? You kind of always had to be on. And sometimes I noticed he would do, like, I live in Vegas, and we would hear, oh, Prince was playing at 2 a.m. after the gig he already played. And, yeah, you know, how would that work? Like, how would you have to be ready to play all these songs?
You'd have to be ready. I said that from the beginning. You know, if you work for this guy, there's nobody, maybe Miles, but I don't think there's anybody after that that will probably intimidate you with that. That was it from the beginning. From the moment that I was in there, you're learning 10, 20 tunes, and then, okay, let me go back and sleep. Okay, well, here's a boom box, and here's 10 more songs for tomorrow. You know, we'll see you tomorrow. And every night was kind of like that because he has so much material. So it was, and it is, the musician's job. I have to pay, it's so crazy to talk about past tense with him. It was the job to be able to almost be like a rotating, you know, jukebox. When you called something, you would have it. Because first of all, he doesn't read music.
Oh, wow.
It's not an environment where you're going to really have a music stand or some music. He would encourage people to write notes at some periods, because he was the kind of cat who, I felt like he was such a genius with music that he would have one idea for a minute and then it's out and here comes the next one. So he's going to explain something to you very quickly and hope that you get it. He's not going to do it twice.
Right.
So you need to write it down, because he's on to the next after that. He's already on to something else. So the best thing to do would be to write it down, because the bad side of that is when you go into rehearsal the next day and when he goes over the same things that he's already explained very quickly the day before that maybe you didn't get. If you end up any of those, it's going to be a problem. And he's probably going to let everybody know that you did that. So he moves fast. You need to have a system with him that works. And he was also the kind of guy that was visually, it was really more about visual stuff then. Visual stuff was very important per se.
Sure.
Music stands weren't really going to be on the stage. So you needed to remember all of that. That was really important as to whatever you needed to do. Something that was really, would mess me up too. Later on, he was so into visuals on a lot of stuff. I couldn't even have a bass amp. So that for me, would affect, you know, the way that I would feel like I was playing, because, you know, as bass players, we want to have some body, you know, we want to feel it. Sure. And in ears don't necessarily, don't always give you that, especially when you're singing or you're having facial movements, because as soon as you do, you know, they start to move a little bit, and then the first thing that you lose is the low end, right? You know, jam it back in there to get the extreme amount of low end that you can get. So that was difficult too. There were some challenges with him, most definitely, but he would, a lot of time, would do the opposite of what you would think. But a lot of it was because the look was important to him, definitely. But memory, you had to remember everything, and don't forget a song. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And that's no joke. That's no joke.
Constantly changing. And like you said, it was, towards like when we got into music college or even before then. So starting in the early 2000s, he was doing his MPG music club. So, you know, you would get to a venue if there was a tour, you do your sound check, and then he's allowing the MPG music club to come into the sound check because that's what they've paid for. So they have access to certain things.
Wow.
So then a sound check then turns into another hour concert, or maybe an hour and a half. So we're playing music, or maybe sometimes he's actually going to sit down with them and talk to them if it's a smaller group. But the majority of the time we're playing. Then we do that. Maybe you eat a little bit as you get ready for the show. Then you go do that show. You do that. And then, like you said, it's true. Then we do an after show or an after party after that at a completely different location. And usually that will not start before probably 1 o'clock in the morning or something of that nature. 1, 2 o'clock, something like that. I'll probably end when the sun comes up around 4. He'll usually do about 2 hours there. So it was definitely the longest day. Some training that I've never seen anywhere else, probably will never. But like I said, if you can do that, you can do anything. And I'm not trying to paint it as a negative thing. It was a lot of hard work. It was a lot of growth for everybody who goes through this thing. But it's an amazing process. Absolutely.
How do you pace yourself for that? I mean, like with the, you know, like most people could barely do a 2-hour show without like collapsing. And he's like, I can't imagine. Yeah.
Well, you know, everybody was in relatively good shape. You know, it was a kind of environment too. You know, they don't encourage, you know, smoking reefer, smoking cigarettes, doing drugs, any of that kind of stuff. There's people not drinking a lot. So it's not really a situation where people are tore up. You know, I think it's a little bit easier to make your body do what it needs to do.
Yeah, sure.
If you're a little cleaner.
Yeah.
But it was tough.
Playing that music must have gave you the shot in the arm. I mean, that band was so kick-ass. I mean, you guys went out and play those songs with that dude in front of people. I mean, I can't imagine the kind of...
It's an unbelievable opportunity and experience, you know, to have someone of that level, like Michael Jackson, Prince, that kind of level who's... You know, again, it's an amazing opportunity for us when we get anything that's not a band. You know, the Rolling Stones are a band, but yeah, luckily enough, they needed a bass player. So, you know, I'm really lucky with that. But a lot of the times, these great bands and these great artists, either they don't need musicians or they need a couple, or once you get in there, nobody wants to give up the slot. So, I mean, it's a wonderful thing. And it's a great thing when somebody of that stature lets you on, because basically they're sharing their world with you. So
absolutely. I guess that becomes your calling card too for everything beyond that. Once you've been in the Prince camp, it's sort of like, oh shit, we got to take her super seriously. You know,
happens with a lot of situations like that. You know, a lot of cats, they go, oh, well, I guess if you played for this person, you must be good. They just make a natural assumption. And sometimes
I like the power of the referral though, Rhonda. Like, you know, you're okay. Yeah, you get to play with Prince and have all these songs you have to play with him, but it kind of starts with the fake book back in Canada, right? Playing all the millions of gigs before that. And then the power of the referral, which you go to NAMM, and then just that one day, if you didn't go to NAMM, who knows how life would have been different. But the power of the referral.
Totally. It's but that's the magic of this journey of music. We know, you know, we don't know what it's going to be. I didn't know what it was going to be when I went into it. I just did it because I liked it. I loved it. I really didn't have any interest in anything else at that age. Thank God it worked, because I don't know what else I would have done, because I really didn't have any other interest. I just wanted to play, you know, play all the time.
Absolutely.
So, and your relationship continues this day with Shilly E. I mean, that's incredible too. Like,
yeah, that is.
You know, Corey played with Shilly E on the where are you? I'm pointing to you. Corey
on the Kelly Clarkson show. Yeah. She was just a guest on the other day, and
that was recently,
yeah. And I was on the show that day as well, so I got to play with her the whole day in the house band. It was amazing. She's so super cool. Nice.
Amazing. Super cool. Super.
Yeah.
Cool. It's just really great to see how many more female musicians are out there now. You know, when I first met Sheila, and still she's, I probably still say that she's probably the most famous female musician that I know.
You know? Yeah, I would agree.
That's recognized. And I mean, it's just it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful vehicle, but it's also nice when people recommend each other, because it is a big family, but it's also a very small family, especially when you work with those types of artists like Prince. It's a very small, close-knit little thing, fishbowl. That's what it does become.
Totally.
Do you ever have dreams that you're about to play another Prince show and you don't know any of the songs?
Oh my God.
You know, and I'm serious about that because I often have dreams, but your gig would be so much more intense than anything that any of us have ever experienced. So I always have dreams like my amp's not set up. I'm setting up all my gear while the first song is going on, that kind of stuff. Do you ever have dreams like that?
No, you know, my crazy dream is that I am not packed in time and cannot, and it's so opposite of me, but can never get my stuff packed, clothes, everything, bags, to get myself in the car to the airport in time. There's always something that happens that makes me miss the flight, or it's a complete catastrophe for an international flight or something, which has never happened. But this is always, if it's a nightmare dream, this is the one that's always reoccurring. And I can't figure out why.
I've had plenty of dreams of being on stage and going, I don't know what song this is. What are we playing? What key is this in? And being like, looking around, like, what is this? And like, very surreal, those moments. Because it goes to show you, like with travel, when it's a big part of your life, you're always kind of thinking about that, no matter, even subconsciously thinking like, I got to get on that flight tomorrow. And oh God,
it's true. But here's the subconscious craziness with my dreams. The ones that I do have that are terrorizing me, have ones taking me back to high school when I didn't study for an exam because
Playing
music or doing too much of that. So those I have that happen.
I had those for years. Yeah.
Completely unprepared for something that I know is right in front of me and going, oh yeah. Shit.
You know? It's like you knew about the test for weeks. You knew about the test for weeks, and you wake up that morning going like, how did I not prepare for this? Oh, well, that's a universal experience, I think, for pretty much anybody on the planet.
Oh, that's good to know. I thought it was just me.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Now, were you playing with Prince at the Forum in Inglewood when the bass player, I forget his name, from Earth, Wind, and Fire got up and played?
Verdeen. No, I was not.
You weren't at that? Oh, man. Because that was so funny because he gets up and he's got a gooseneck microphone attached to the horn of his...
Oh, no, that's Larry.
Larry Graham. You're talking about Larry Graham or Verdeen White?
That's Larry Graham for sure because he has a mic built right out of his bass. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm sorry, but who does he play with?
Who?
That guy.
I know.
Larry terrible.
Graham? You mean Larry? No. Larry Graham plays with himself. He's like, he was the original bass player for Sly and the Family Stone.
That's okay. Right. Yes.
Graham Central Station.
Larry, I don't know why I thought somebody said it was the guy from Earth, Wind, and Fire playing bass. But anyway, I love that mic stand coming out of his.
It's so insane. Yeah.
His bass.
It's so great.
It's like the perfect wireless system where you don't have to wear a headset.
Yeah, it's perfect.
You just lean into your mic.
It snaps right in. To the mail.
It's such a strange thing.
Yeah, it snaps right in on that little stand. It's very cool.
That's so cool. Yeah.
I mean, it was bouncing around all over the place. But
yeah, that's Larry though. He's really smart about his gear.
Okay, he really is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Who's that guy? Tell me his name again.
Larry Graham.
Larry Graham.
Graham.
Come on, Corey.
The father. Now
Corey's getting a funk education right there.
That's him.
Some say that he invented the thumb. He was the first one to play that. Really? Now some people will dispute that.
Interesting.
It will probably go down in history as him being the father of the thumb, the first person to play that
one. I could see that. Amazing. Absolutely, yeah.
Although so let me ask you, slap at the bass.
It's slap at the bass. Exactly. Are you tired of hearing that expression? You know, let's talk about women in the music business, because it's funny that you bring this up, because Prince was very hip to it, like from the very beginning. He always said, well, at least from the very beginning, say around Purple Rain when he became universally well known, he loved having male, female, multicultural. The whole thing was this big, you know, rainbow of humans. And it's interesting, you know, in this sausage party that we play in, it's sort of, you know, you kind of, and even doing these talks that we do, I find we still, no matter what, you try and chase down other musicians and people to talk to, and you can't help but land at least over 50% of the time on male musicians and male performers or whatnot. It is becoming more and more common, but, you know, like back when we were kids, it was like, oh, wow, A, B, or C, some female artists that can bury. Now I'm watching, you know, YouTube, and we all are watching YouTube of some 10-year-old girl playing Tom Sawyer on the drums, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Or like 8-year-old girl, like children, and I'm like, I mean, it's become so much more of a universal thing. I mean, the ability to be able to play, you know, whichever kind of music is not a male or female dominated thing, only just based on the fact that if you're like yourself, where you pick up the bass and just have a natural sort of affinity for it and can follow it through to start to get the chops and the all that kind of stuff, it suddenly becomes a career. Do you find now, of course, when you started out, it was an anomaly almost, or was just more rare. Is it way more common now, do you find?
I think it is way more common now, because I think just humans in general tend to, you know, lead by example. And yeah. I think that when I started, there weren't as many. There were very few. And I never saw any probably in real life, except for maybe a teacher that I might have had. I did have an acoustic teacher that was a female when I was actually in junior college, which was great. She was a classical player and a very accomplished classical player. But I think that for women, you know, we lead by example. So I think that now when we're in more of a society where things are a little bit more focal, things are a little bit more visual. And of course, when we have the internet to be able to see things and people have YouTube, I think it's more of a norm. So I think that's definitely a big part of why there's more of a resurgence or a surge of women playing, because they see that they can.
Do you think that as a woman, it gave you a leg up in a way in certain areas when they were looking for, because I don't think it's necessarily a case that when someone's looking for a player, they don't even think like male or female, just that when people are walking in the room and trying out and it's this guy and this guy and this guy, and then suddenly, you know, you walk in, is no matter what you do, you're going to immediately fall into a category of being memorable because, oh, wow, you know, I've never seen a girl throw down like that, especially at that time. You think it gave you any sort of like leg up as far as like being able to get the gig?
Well, I think it might be able to give you a leg up if you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
You do the work, you know. Yeah. Something that my mother used to tell me too was, you know, you have to be twice as good, you know. And I think that you know, whether you can be is questionable, but you certainly want to strive for that. You want to get the attention, but you don't want to get the attention in a bad way.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I think that it leaves opportunities, especially if you are unique or you're gifted, or, you know, that's definitely something that people.
Of course.
I think there's also another side to it. You know, I've had some experiences, and I'm sure females have too, of some disgruntled males who might have different reasons to have an issue with you, you know, or maybe have an issue with me because I have the gig, or maybe try to tell me, or, you know, tell other people behind my back maybe that, you know, the only reason.
Yeah, but fuck that guy who said
fuck that guy.
She brings up a good point, though.
It's so great.
You know, the fact that
she was just about to name names and the guy decided he was going to hack her.
Larry Graham.
There we go. There you're back, Rhonda.
There you're back.
Oh, she disappeared.
She's gone. She'll be back. Don't worry.
There we go.
You're back.
You know, because my signal is that me, guys. Because my signal is solid over there. That is crazy. Let me just finish what I was saying. Sorry about that.
Okay.
So I think that sometimes just the downside to that too is I think that I have met some males who really haven't been real comfortable with that situation, or maybe felt that they were more deserving of the position that I was taking. Maybe they felt that they were a better player. Solely based on the fact that I am a female
And you look good and
I look cute or I think cute or, you know, something along those natures, but it has nothing to do with my ability. And
that's how Shane got all the gigs, by the way. He's adorable.
There's two sides to everything, guys. So, you know, I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, that's true. It's kind of human nature in essence, really. Whether it's male or female, I mean, people sort of like, no matter what's happening, it's kind of like, how come that person got the gig and I didn't?
I was going to say the same thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Should men do that to each other and females do that to each other?
Of course, of course.
It's kind of gender-based, yeah.
But it is nice to see it kind of leveling off and seeing... you know, just seeing that kind of thing where, like, if I was putting a band together today and I was holding auditions, I'm just saying randomly, not to get rid of these guys. But but if I was, it would be kind of like an open thing. It wouldn't be you have to have this color hair or this kind of shirt on, or, you know, it's kind of like, I would love to see, you know, because I've known a lot of kick-ass musicians, and they were, and some of them were men, and some of them were women, and it never really fazed me, even though I've never really played in much of a lineup with male or female players. But I have certainly played in different jamming situations with girls and thought to myself, man, she throws down harder. I've known girl drummers that throw down harder than a lot of dudes I play with.
Yeah, I know. But I do want to say this, though. I grew up with a bunch of just gracious young teenagers, young men, just great guys. Everybody sure. was so freaking cool to me from the time that I was 10 years old playing in their basement, playing at this person's house. When I go back and think of all of the things, as we all do and can do, all the things that you've done for music, all the places that you went to, all the people that you played with, even before you made any money, it's amazing what we were willing to do. And the thing is, I carried a bass amp on a school bus before. I mean, I'm talking about like an Ampeg.
Wow, holy cow.
You know, or an Trainer. SVP. Remember the Trainers? The old Trainer
yeah. amps? Yeah, those big ass huge heads that weighed like 40 pounds.
I'm on a Trainer Facebook page. Like, I follow a Trainer Facebook page. Garnet amps, Lado guitars, like a ton of Canadian gear I just follow because I'm like, remember this stuff? Lairvay, Godin, of course. Godin's yes. still around. Godin's very, very
yeah, Godin is really doing well. But Trainer was Canadian? I didn't know that.
Out of Ontario or something? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think Long McQuaid owns the brand and sells it like currently, like brand new, awesome products, all Trainer.
Wow, cool.
I know we don't have a lot of time so much, Rhonda, but I did want to ask you about something about the Jeff Beck experience. And how was that a 180 from Prince? Like, Prince being so focused on the stuff, and now you jump into Jeff Beck, and it's, you know, you got Vinny Holmes who's just going off.
It was so great, Shane, just to do a complete 180 when I was in a situation where it was just like, do whatever you want, play whatever you want, whatever.
Really?
Whatever, yeah. Wow,
that's so awesome.
Ask about something, you know, whatever you think is best. And it was great because it was a smaller group to start off with. So it was only just drums, bass, keyboards, and Jeff. So that dynamic was great too, to have a lot of space. So that was amazing. But definitely heartbroken. We just did this great record with Jeff that was actually, we were supposed to put it out this year, but because of COVID, it got a little crazy. We were going to tour Johnny Depp's on it, doing some
interesting
things. He's singing.
I've been hearing about this forever. Yeah,
it's a really great record.
Are you singing on it?
I'm sorry.
Are you singing on it?
I'm not singing. Am I singing on it? No, I'm not singing on it. But I'm definitely playing on it. But Vinny's playing on it, and we toured a little bit off of it last year. And it was really great, and it was a little sad because we were going to go out. Do some promo with it this year before COVID, and then we were going to go out as a trio, which I was
that would have been so awesome.
You can imagine how great that is with Jeff and Vinny Caliuta. Come on,
dude.
It doesn't get any better. I mean,
does Vinny tell Frank Zappa stories? I'd love to hear those stories.
Yes, he does. Vinny is the most amazing too. But yes, dude has played with everybody. Oh my god,
he has. Yeah, he's a monster.
I mean, what a pleasure. What a pleasure, dudes, to play with this guy. I mean, God.
Totally, yeah. Well, we've kept you a long time. I could honestly do this for another 2 hours. Let's do this for another 2 hours. Anyway, so my next question.
we haven't played Jeopardy yet.
We haven't played Jeopardy. What?
There
it is. This is the headliner right now.
Well, you know what? I mean, like I said, I mean, we want to hear the stories. We want to meet the people. So, I mean, if you guys have time, if you want to stick around, we can get into it. Okay. Obviously, we know you're from Canada, so we like to, you know, this is a new thing for us because we started it last week. But we put together...
Alex passed away, so we had to...
In memory of Alex, so we put together our own little spot on the show here. We've personally made this board of questions. So the idea here is, as long as you come out better than these guys, you win.
Which is likely.
And we got a little bit of a play at home feature. If anybody wants to get in on this, put your name in the comments. I don't care what you write. If one of these guys land on a Daily Giver and, and correctly answer the question, you will be contacted and you win a free toque. It's as easy as that.
All right.
Wow.
So,
how has this not been the whole? We got to start doing this the whole hour. No one cares about what I'm talking about over here.
Without further ado, let's get to it.
Yay!
Okay. Yeah.
Here we go.
Wow. This is very impressive.
So, the way this, we don't mess
what
around.
What the hell is a pot pourri?
There's even a score this time. Look at the scores.
So the way this is going to work, and it basically is as simple as that. It's basic math. So, I mean, obviously 100 being easiest, 500 being the hardest. Each one of you are going to get 5 questions, and you can pick from around the board. And whoever ends up with the most points, but if you get it wrong, you lose those points. So this is where the math comes into play.
Oh,
so we're always play Canadians. We're going to start with our guests. So Rhonda, you can go ahead and choose first.
Oh,
psych. About?
and these are all Canadian based questions and answers.
Oh boy, celebs for 100, please.
Celebs for 100. All right, let's see.
You got to read it out, Darren.
Oh, sorry. Easily Canada's most beloved celebrity, Terry Fox was forced to end his marathon of hope after 143 days in this city on September 1st, 1980. A monument stands there today.
Oh, God.
Exactly. I'm like, that's going back. I think I might know, though.
I think so.
I think I know, too. There's a statue there.
Oh. Okay.
Well, now you psyched me out. I forgot about the statue, and I'm trying to.
Who is Larry Graham?
Okay, I'm gonna say Ottawa.
Oh,
Ontario.
Oh.
Hey, she got the province right.
Yeah,
that's right. And check out that's me in the Terry Fox run. We made the front page of the paper the other year. Right?
Yeah.
In a tube jersey, no less.
There we go. So
that's awesome.
We're going to have to go -100 for Rhonda. All right, let's move around the board.
That was a hard question for 100 points.
That was really hard, Darren.
Really hard.
Hard?
Okay.
Not hard for you because you're from Thunder Bay.
Yeah. For the Thunder Bay guy, that was a walk in the park.
That was stacked.
How about a Halifax question?
Exactly.
Well, you know what? I thought it was just common knowledge. Everybody, knows where he started.
That's all.
But who knew it? Who actually knew that one? Just curious.
So does Rhonda ask another one, or do we all go around and then come back?
Now it's to you.
I was there as a little kid.
To me?
Who's next?
Yeah.
I'll take celebs for 200.
Celebs for 200. Okay.
Mouse Wolf Deputy Mayor Time Traveler. What the hell? Wow, dude. Mouse Wolf Deputy Mayor Time Traveler. Now it's going to take a second to kind of filter this into the Canadian aspect. Oh man!
See, you guys are missing it.
Exactly. We're gonna be here forever. We're gonna have to put a time clock on that.
Somebody should plug a guitar in and play that thing.
That's a good point.
We're gonna need an answer.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm acquiescing. How do you like that?
I just listened to him on
a Marc Maron podcast. Damn it.
Time traveler. How many Canadian time travelers do you know of?
That's a good point. He was in my brain too. I used to live right by Michael J. Fox, like high school or whatever the hell it is in Burnaby, BC.
All right. Okay. Well, sorry, but that's 200 in the hole for you. Corey, we're going to go to you.
I will take quirks and slang for 300.
Oh, I should have went with that.
We might call it a hoodie, come on. But it's Saskatchewan.
What a lob over the plate.
What is a bunny hug?
Come on.
Oh.
See? That's what they call Rhonda. Hoodies in Saskatchewan, Rhonda.
Never in my life. Wow.
No one knows why. No one knows why with those.
I didn't know it felt like 2 years ago.
Okay, Shane, your control goes to you.
Okay, I'm going to go potpourri for 400.
400, all right.
400, damn, dude.
Called Canadian bacon abroad. It is commonly known as this back home.
Why can't we steal this?
What is what?
What is ham?
Incorrect.
What? Bohemian.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say back bacon.
Yeah, that's me too.
Yeah.
Did anybody know that?
Bohemian is Ontario.
Didn't know that.
In my life.
It's definitely in Ontario it's called pea meal, but not on the West Coast.
I'm not eating anything called pea meal.
They call it pea meal here.
We call it ham.
Really?
Yeah, I'm with Shane. It was more like ham than it was bacon for sure.
Incorrect. Anyway, moving on. 400 in the hole.
Brent, here we go.
Okay, sports.
Sports. He always wins sports.
For 300.
Sports for 300. Okay.
Damn, dude. Oh, come on.
Canada's official sport.
Oh, this is a good one. This is a good one.
Oh, yeah, psych. Hockey.
Come on. Psych, Fitzy. Psych.
What did you say?
It's not hockey.
Okay.
Really?
It's, no, it's, oh God, now I'm drawing a blank. It's, come on.
Pick me, Mr. Steen. Pick me, Mr. Steen.
I need an answer.
Yeah, I'm going to fail.
You're going to fail.
No, I don't know.
Anybody else know?
Bob? Come on, dude.
It's lacrosse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do I get those points?
Stick in my garage here right now. Sorry, I just
we split the points.
No,
this is terrible today.
Son of a! This is tough.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Like I said, I thought you guys were gonna be on the ball here. So
back to Rhonda.
Rhonda, back to you.
Uh-oh, I'm not gonna take sports. famous for 200.
Mm. Canada is famous for. Much to the dislike of many, this debatable pizza topping was first used by a man in Ontario, Canada.
It's a bit sketchy, but I think I know it.
I think I know it too.
I'm going to say pineapple.
Yes.
Hawaiian pineapple. Yep.
Finally.
Well done.
All right. Puts you back on the plus side.
I love that it's like some guy in Ontario does that. It's called a Hawaiian pizza immediately.
Exactly. Todd, back to you.
You can get in Boston pizza any time of day. damn it. Let's go. I'll go quirks and slang for 400. I'm going to get jiggy with it. So this might be tough.
This term is used to refer to kilometers, the unit of length in the metric system equal to 1,000 meters.
Its
nickname or term refers to kilometers.
What is clicks, Darren?
What is a click?
Okay,
that puts Todd on the plus side. Corey,
can you believe it?
I will take quirks and slang for 500.
Damn.
Wow.
A commotion or fuss, usually caused by a disagreement or difference in opinion, most commonly found during or after sports games.
A commotion or fuss, usually caused by a disagreement or difference in opinion.
Which is why at 9 years old, I stopped playing hockey. I was like, why is everybody screaming and yelling at children?
That's
a hard one, huh?
Canadian slang. Three seconds.
Ooh.
What is a kerfuffle?
Charcoal.
That out of your back pocket.
Hold one out.
Well,
okay, Shane, here you go.
I'm either like gonna severely die here or I'm gonna crush it. Okay, I'm gonna go potpourri again for 500.
Potpourri 500.
Okay.
It is the name of the famous schooner seen here on the Canadian dime. And this is a daily giver. If you answer this correctly, somebody in the comment section is going to win a toque.
Oh, shit.
All right.
That's tough, dude. I don't know what it is. That's digging super deep.
Well, I know it is, but I don't know what it is.
Oh, Corey Churkle knows it.
Are you going to pass?
Fuck you.
You're passing? Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Shane loses the points, but Corey, if you get this, we're still going to give the toque away to a fan listening here.
Well, yeah, okay.
Is it the Blue Nose Schooner?
It is.
I knew that.
I couldn't remember it, but I knew it was like one of those things that we should know.
Oh, I got some digging out to do.
Yeah,
we're back, Canadians. Sure.
Brent, to you.
Famous for I'm going to play it safe, 300.
Even though the answers are not always as easy as pie, this famous board game was founded in Canada.
Easy as pie. Oh, God. Here we go. Pie.
You've lost this game to me.
yeah, I know. We used to play it on the bus. What the heck was it?
And it's Canadian created.
Oh, like a trivia game?
Well, I don't know. You have to give me the answer.
Well, okay. Trivia. We played.
I need an answer.
Yeah, we played rock and roll trivia or something like that.
Yeah, your answer?
Yeah, it has to be.
We're going to have to give you a negative strike on that one. It is Trivial Pursuit.
Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah.
That's what? The answer we're looking for.
Yeah, that's a Canadian game, believe it or not.
Founded in Canada. Yeah.
Did not know that. Yeah. Wow.
Amazing.
Okay, Rhonda, back to you.
Celebs for 400, please.
Celebs for 400.
Son of a...
He is just one of only four people to have his name etched in both the Stanley Cup and the Grey Cup. His name was added to the Grey Cup after the 91 win by the Toronto Argonauts.
Oh, what? I know this.
God.
Mr. Steen. It's not John Candy. I know that.
Stanley and the Grey Cup. So, okay.
I know that.
I might have made these.
Oh God!
This should have been in sports.
It should have been read as celebs to Darren Steen, not necessarily celebs to anybody.
Okay.
I give this one up. You Wayne give Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky was part owner of the Argos in 91, so yes.
Now, was John Candy part owner back then, too?
John Candy and Bruce McLean, or whatever his name was.
McNall.
Well done, Rhonda.
Oh, she's going to win this.
I got lucky there.
Damn it.
Todd, back to you.
Celebs for 500. I may as well go hard.
500. Before becoming a famous actor, this Canadian began his career designing album covers for the band America.
Oh, my God. He's an artist?
Well, it's in the question. Before becoming a famous actor, this Canadian began his career designing album covers
for famous the band actor, America. You know what? This feels like something I should know. Man, and you consider this person a celeb. Okay.
You would, too.
Yeah, of course I would. Canadian. Let's see here. I should know this. Oh my God. It's like so on the tip of my tongue. I just watched the Gordon Lightfoot documentary.
This is also a Daily Giver. I just noticed. So
a Daily Giver.
Yeah.
Okay.
So someone's getting the toque. This is going to wipe me all out of place.
If you get that correct. Yeah.
Eugene Levy. I don't know. I'm just pulling Schitt's Creek out of my head.
There. Incorrect. Anybody else want to give it a try to win somebody a toque?
I'll try. Donald Sutherland?
Incorrect.
Wow.
Hartman.
What?
Oh, wow.
I didn't know he was Canadian.
From Edmonton, Alberta.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Wow.
From Edmonton, yeah.
That puts Todd down.
He passed away. He passed away, right?
Yeah.
Eight years ago? So
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a rough one, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's
right. So, Corey.
I just got whooped, dude. I got whooped.
Yeah. You can either play it safe or you can go big and try to wrap it up. What do you want to do?
How much do I need?
Well, you can just keep going. You're at 800, but there's still some points on the board.
You're in first place. Rhonda's in second place. The rest of us are.
Let's go.
We're going in the other direction.
We're going to put some timelines now. You got like a couple of seconds here. We're not going to sit here all night and do this or all day. Quirks and slang for 200. Pincher Creek, Alberta experienced a temperature shift from minus 19 Celsius to plus 22 Celsius in just 1 hour and 62. Drastic changes are often referred to as this in the prairies.
Chinook. What is a Chinook?
Yeah.
All right.
Come on.
Good one, Corey. Good one.
Shane. That was lame.
Shane to you.
Minus 900. Okay, I'm going to go Potpourri. 300. Come on, this time.
That'll put you a negative 600.
Sharing its greatness with our neighbors to the south, this, by surface area, is the second largest lake in the world and the largest freshwater one.
Oh, damn.
Oh, that's, it's Lake Superior.
Lake Superior. There you go. That.
You son of a.
That should be geography, by the way. I don't think that's potpourri.
It's potpourri is just a mix of anything. That's what the category is. So
that's what potpourri means, yeah.
Yeah. Brent, we're going to you.
Better go famous for 500.
famous for 500. Canada has lots of vast untouched wilderness areas that are perfect for seeing the greatest light show on Earth, the Northern Light, also known as this.
Oh, great. I don't know, Corey.
I've known so many of the other ones.
For the milk, it's the, Aurora Borealis. What is the Aurora Borealis?
Sorry,
I used to see those in northern Manitoba all the time, but me and Fitz saw them recently in Iceland. Oh, actually, we couldn't really see them in Iceland, but we tried to see them in Iceland.
That's right.
So that brings you up to a negative one. Rhonda, you're still on the plus side.
Rhonda, you've got to get 500 points here to beat Corey. You don't want to get that.
Corey can also lose too.
That's true.
Yes.
Famous for 400.
Famous for 400. Okay. Known as the pride of the American side, Canada plays a big role in this story, known also as Big Fitz and Fitz. This is a daily giver.
This doesn't have anything to do with Brent Fitz, does it?
Well, you just give me the answer that you think it is. Of the American side.
If it makes you feel better, Rhonda, I have no idea what he's talking about.
I have no idea.
Come on, you guys. I spent time putting these together thinking you would know these.
You really overestimated yourself.
The answer is in the question.
As I survey the entire...
I'm going to help. I'm going to sing this out to you. Even though this isn't the correct lyrics, this is where I was going here. Known as the pride of the American side.
Oh.
Canada plays a big role in this story, known also as Big Fitz and Fitz.
I know what you're talking about now, yeah. Okay.
Hard, though. It's tricky.
It's tricky, but I wasn't going to give anything away.
Yeah, I got to give up on this one. I'll give it up.
What is it? What is the
essay? Edmund Fitzgerald.
Tank in Ontario waters.
In the Great Lake, they call Gitchagumi.
Exactly.
That was hard.
It was a song, right?
What do you guys think this was going to be?
Gordon Lightfoot. That's right.
Just watched that Gordon Lightfoot documentary and went down a rabbit hole about that very thing. I didn't know they called it the Big Fitz or the Fitz.
I've never heard of it.
Well, I just assumed that somebody was going to say Brent Fitz. See, there was some trickery involved.
That was very tricky. That was a tricky.
And we're going back to you, Todd. You got to get on the plus side.
I guess I'll take. What am I at? Oh, come on. I guess I'm gonna try and shoot for zero at celebs for 300.
Celebs for 300. Literally improving the lives of millions, his medical research and fascination with the metabolic disorder known as diabetes in the 20s led to the invention of insulin.
Rick Moranis. Who is Rick Moranis? I'm sorry. I know who that is, but I can't remember the name. God. So I'm looking for a negative 600 here, Darren.
Okay. Frederick Banting, first Canadian to be awarded a Nobel Prize.
I thought you would know who that is.
Frederick Banting. He also sang "The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald." Yeah.
Banting and Bates, like, come on, you guys.
That was hard.
That was hard. Right?
Jeez.
Well, Corey, to you.
Well, I'm going to go slow and steady. Quirks and slang for 100.
A word used to refer to a flask-sized bottle of liquor.
Oh,
what is a Mickey?
Come on.
There you go.
I didn't pick him good today. I didn't pick him good.
Shane, to you.
Potpourri 200.
She was the first and only female Prime Minister of Canada.
Mm.
Oh.
What?
Oh, yeah.
It was very brief.
Very brief, but still on record.
She replaced Joe Clark. Yes. I can remember his name. I can't remember her name.
I remember her first name, but not her last. Oh, wait.
Me too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this like pre-Trudeau era or something?
No, after.
No.
80s, after maybe?
Pierre, yeah.
So far, the Prime Mulroney days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Gonna need an answer.
After Brian Mulroney, right?
I think pre-Brian Mulroney.
I don't know her name.
Kim Campbell.
I knew it was Kim. Yeah,
I did too.
Campbell seems like a very Canadian.
But
name.
She got there by default somehow, right? She wasn't actually elected.
Exactly, but still goes on record as being prime minister.
Did Joe die or something, or how did that work?
No.
There was just it was an interim position, but still on the books. Okay. So
we were kids. I don't know.
Brent, we're going to you.
Sports 500.
Trying to save it. Together, they hold the NHL record for most combined points by brothers.
Who are the Sutter brothers?
Who are Wayne and Brent Gretzky?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Wayne. Wow. 57 for Wayne and 4 for Brent.
Oh,
see, I failed. That was a trick question. 4 for Brent. Sorry, Brent Gretzky, but it was, you know,
that was a trick question.
That's amazing.
But it's true. But it's true.
Embarrassing.
But it's true.
That was a trick question. Lacrosse. Oh my God.
Okay, Rhonda, here you go.
Famous for 100.
Rhonda.
Famous for 100. 80% of all the world's supply is produced in Quebec, Canada.
Maple syrup.
Yeah. Yay!
Come on.
You sugared that one.
I know.
Now, if Corey really shits the bed, then we'll... Oh, it's my turn, isn't it?
God, yeah.
Oh, God. I guess it doesn't matter, does it?
No, you're going to end on a negative with just how bad...
Yeah, I'll go potpourri for 100 just because
you want to get one right. Softball. Now past its before date, this once popular cell phone manufacturer was founded in Waterloo, Ontario in 1984.
What is the BlackBerry, Darren?
That is correct.
I got something really good.
That's a good one.
Really, I did not know that.
Yeah. Canadian, baby.
He's a pretty strong feller and smart.
Yeah, Corey, I don't think you can lose here, but let's see where you're going to go.
Sports for 100, please.
Oh, playing it safe.
Oh, sure. Well, why not?
Past or present, these are the only two Canadian teams who have never won a Stanley Cup.
Past or present, these are the only two Canadian teams who've never... Okay, so...
That would be really interesting. Let me think.
Who are the Quebec Nordiques? And... Who are the...
Okay, I should actually, I'm going to give you this one because when I refer to that past or present being the franchises that exist today, but may have also been a franchise in the past. So it has, like, I'm not referring to Canadian teams that are no longer here. So I'm going to give you that one. So, cause I didn't,
So in other words, word Quebec correctly. Is not one of the answers.
Quebec is not one of the answers, but one of the teams in Canada,
the existing teams.
Who are the Vancouver Canucks?
Yep.
And who are the Winnipeg Jets?
That is correct. See, technically, Ottawa has won a cup in their previous, I guess, franchise. So that was where I was going with that. But
okay,
we're going to give you that one. We're going to give you that one. So
okay.
And what was the previous franchise?
Well, they were the Ottawa Senators back in the early 1900s.
That's right.
But yeah.
They won back then.
They won back then, yeah. So, hey, all right, Shane, here you go. Redeem yourself, buddy.
All right. Go big. 400.
Hit it, baby.
Although they were the first Canadian franchise based outside the U.S., they went on to become the Washington Nationals in 2005.
Corey will know this.
Washington Nationals?
That I don't know, actually. The California Seals.
Remember them?
Yeah, I do. Pictures of that.
Who, you guys know? I don't know.
No.
Nobody
do
knows?
Do you know, Brent?
It's is it baseball? Who are the Washington Nationals?
Were the Montreal?
That's
really?
That was hard.
Brent, here's the last one for you, and we're finished the round.
Okay.
Now having a trophy named in his honor, he was the first NHL player to score 50 goals in one season.
Trophy named his... Oh, so it'd be...
It's under his name, yeah. The trophy is named after him.
Oh,
Rick Moranis. I'm sorry. Who is Rick Moranis?
5 seconds.
Yeah, I'm not gonna know. Is it the Clancy Award? Yeah.
Who is Maurice Rocket?
Corey Chirico, ladies and gentlemen. Corey Chirico. Rhonda came in second, though.
Yeah.
Rhonda.
Yep. Well done, Rhonda.
That was fun. That was fun, guys.
That was really challenging. I'm going to be sitting around reading, like, Canadian encyclopedias and stuff.
I thought we looked uneducated. We failed.
Well, you know, I told you it wasn't going to be a walk in the park.
No, I appreciate that.
Those are challenging.
Yeah.
But
well done.
We always sit on the edge of your seat. Rhonda, you finish on the plus side, so that's fantastic. We gave away some toques. Leave your name in the comments and we're going to choose somebody and I'll be in touch.
Yes.
Anything you guys want to say?
Yeah, really quick, Rhonda, solo record. What's going on with your solo record?
You know, I am still writing. I have a bunch of stuff here, but I all of a sudden I've done a... I want to kind of go in another direction. So I'm, wow. I'm taking a minute, taking a step back and making sure I'm not making a mistake, but I'm in think mode right now. So I got stuff. I got bullets in the gun, stuff in the tank, still working it out.
That's definitely very exciting.
And watching on something, Shane. We did some great stuff together, Shane, by the way. You got some interesting tracks at your house that we did too.
I'm that were fun. When you get it. All
absolutely.
That's how you guys met, right? By doing a session together.
No, do you guys know Prashant Aswani?
Yeah.
Guitar player? Yeah. Ron had collaborated, I think, on a few records with Prashant. And he did a solo gig and hired me for the gig, and Rhonda was on it already. So
awesome.
I had the extreme luxury and privilege of doing a gig with Rhonda at the Baked Potato. Is that a year ago now?
Probably, yeah. Could have been two. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
There you go.
Year and a half. Yeah. I had the pleasure of playing with Shane for the first time. So it was absolutely amazing. Absolutely.
It was amazing.
Amazing.
Can't wait. Love you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Yes, thank you.
That was really awesome.
Yeah, I've been a fantastic time. You know, hour and a half flies by just like that. Congratulations.
Maybe for you. Corey. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Congrats, Corey, on the win. You'll be returning champion next week. Rhonda, we want to thank you for coming on, spending some time with us and a bunch of, you know, just hanging out. See everybody next week. Same time, same place.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you, Rhonda.
So much.
You rule.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good week, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
See y'all.